What is up, everybody? My name is Austin Buckner.
Trevor Holder.
Oh, Jeremy Hall, Jacob Snowflake. You know, it all depends on where you're listening to me, where you're catching me. Jam from the football show. Yeah, man of many names.
Hell yeah. Dude, you're a guy that I've wanted to have on for a long time. We didn't even talk about this. You and I used to host a podcast together.
That is true. Briefly. Yeah, we did do that.
You were the second co-host for Wrestle Nerds for a while. We did commentary together at 3XW. You helped train me, which is probably something you don't want to admit to the public.
Oh, but yeah.
I wasn't the worst of your trainees.
No, by far, we're not the worst.
Yeah. I can't even think of his name, but one of them ended up being a pedophile. So.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
We don't That was weird.
Talk about him anymore. We've mentioned that before on the podcast, haven't we?
I think I brought it up too.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a reason, you know, when you think about it, the backstory a little bit, guy up and packs and moves everything from Kansas to Des Moines, Iowa with no plan. I think you kind of know why he did that.
I think John West put it best. We don't talk about him anymore. He died on his way back to his home planet.
Yep.
Yeah. But, man, it was so good having you on because there were stories that I've heard from other people about you, and about like APW and about Magnum, that it was good to have you on and talk through your perspective of those things.
I'm not sure if that's good that you've heard so many stories about, but not about me, that like, but not from my perspective. But
one of them was the biggest story in independent wrestling for probably three months.
Yeah. So, and that was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So lots of twists and turns.
No, we reconnected in person in December, and ever since then, I've wanted to get you on the show. So it was awesome to have you on my birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. But I wanted to put together the best slate of guests that we possibly could. If we're going to sit here for, 4 hours, might as well get the homies in. So it was good to have you in.
Yeah, I had a blast. It. Yeah. Awesome. And there's plenty more stories for
other we'll have to have you back. Too, for sure. Yeah. So, without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Ice Cream Sunday Podcast. I want to preface this by saying I'm probably going to need to have you on like at least one, possibly two more times, because out of all of the guests that we've had on, minus maybe Jack Stamper, who I've known since kindergarten, I probably have the most history with you of any guest we've ever had on the show. As far as wrestling commentary and hosting a podcast together, and then you being half of the team that trained me to wrestle, there's a ton
of history there. And as you and I both know, I like to talk, so when I ask you like, hey, what's the plan for today, and you hit me like eight different topics, I'm like, there's no way we're getting that in an hour. But it'll be fun.
I wanted to start at the beginning. I know you through wrestling. How did you first fall in love with wrestling as a fan?
It's always been there. It's been consistent, growing up, both my grandmothers were big wrestling fans. So when I was getting babysat, we were watching wrestling together. I was running around doing like the Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah.
Ho at like 18 months years old, which was cool. Cause then eventually get down the road, I got to meet Hacksaw and hang out with him. So that was kind of a full circle moment, but wrestling was always there. And just fell in love with it at an early age and always have been a fan. I've never drifted. There's moments where we all hate the product and we hate the business, but at the same time, we all love it. When it's good, it's great. It's fantastic. When it's bad, it's really bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I try to pinpoint it and think about like what it is that drew me to it at an early age. You know, I'm 30, can be 37. So obviously I grew up a Hulkamaniac, as most kids did. So you're watching live action superheroes and it's got something for everybody. And especially that age, the late 80s, early 90s, it was bright. It was colorful. Like the heroes were heroes. It was over the top before you got into the occupational era of wrestling where everyone had a side job, was just doing it like on the weekends type of a thing. It's like, oh, he wrestles on the weekends. He's an accountant by day. He works for the IRS. He's a dentist.
He's a repo man.
Yes, exactly. A dentist by trade, but an evil henchman come Saturday night and, Sunday pay-per-views. But so just have always it's always just been there. It's been like my thing. And now like my kids, it's like their thing. My youngest, we were talking before we went on, Rowan, he's 3 years old. All he does is one play guys. Like it's wrestlers. It's nonstop watching it. Him and my oldest, they'll watch, you know, stop motion animation on YouTube.
That's very cool. They'll
recreate some stuff with the figures. My youngest calls it fake guys because wrestling is guys. Like I want to watch guys. Can we watch guys? And that's, well, I want to watch fake guys. And that's the YouTube wrestling. But yeah, it's just always been, it's always been there. I've always been a fan of it.
When did you start train? So the APW guys.
Yeah.
So it's like you and your brother.
Yep.
And like the Beautiful Bodies.
Yes.
And Team Lariat. Like, where did all those guys come from? Where did you guys train?
It's been it's a crazy backstory. And I don't know if I've ever actually told the entire backstory of it. So growing up in Indianola, our barber trained at Harley Race's Academy down in St. Louis, started working around the Midwest, opened up his own company that were running out of Indianola, eventually became IPW.
Gotcha.
So there was NEW that he started with a lot of that same talent that eventually branched off to IPW. So about, I was 16, I think, it was my brother's 14th birthday, and my dad had this idea of bringing the wrestling ring out. We lived in the country, so we had plenty of place to put it. So he's talking to the barber. He's like, hey, what would you charge me to bring the wrestling ring out, you know, get the kids out there, it's birthday. So we sort of started backyard wrestling in an actual wrestling ring at 14. He was 14, I was 16. My friends from high school, his friends from school, you know, we were all wrestling fans. So we had a crash course one afternoon in bumping and tie ups and rope running and this, that, or the other. And then it was, okay, you guys can play around for a few hours. You know, they all sat there hooting and hollering. The guys that come down and train us, you know, Big Dog, Chance Cordova was there.
Yep.
Vic Cross, Justin Decent was out there. That was the first time I met him. That was when he was just getting started. So it was their ring. And then after that afternoon, those of us that wanted to keep doing it, this was right before 3X was starting. Mm-hmm. So I talked to Dustin. I'm like, hey, what would you charge us for your ring? He's like, well, I sold it, but, you know, 3X is here. They've got a ring. You know, I'll let you know if they're interested.
This would have been like 03, 04. I think
this was
3X started in 05.
3X started in 05. So this was 2000. The first time I was in the ring was 04. So this was 2005. 3X, like I said, was just getting off the ground. And as many young promoters, yeah, you're going to give me some money and an opportunity to, you know, pay some talent. Sure. Yeah. Go ahead. Have at it, kid. We don't have to do anything. So my dad would go pick the ring up, drop it off. We'd have it for a weekend. We would get everybody together. We would do as many shows as we could squeeze into that one weekend. Terrible, terrible wrestling, awful matches. So we started yarding Joey Burt. We had a mutual friend. He went to high school with the kid that I worked with at the time that found out what we did. So he started coming down, and we sort of took what we did in the backyard with those of us that wanted to be halfway serious about it. Mike Dabb went, who sort of trained me more, continued my education, I guess, him and Marcus Holiday, Josh mm-hmm. Donner. Mike D went to church with my uncle. Those guys were trained wrestlers by Fast Eddie. They worked at the HCWA, the Hardcore Wrestling, out in Colfax at the time. They were the only wrestlers, I'll use the term wrestlers, on the card. It was, you guys open it, you have your boring wrestling match, you know, God forbid you have a decent wrestling match, and then the rest was the worst of ECW for the most part.
Yeah.
Just hardcore, gross, violent for no reason, no storytelling. But yeah, so those guys started coming out, they started hanging around, they started showing us more, and the further we got into it, the more serious we got into it, the guys that were doing it just for fun, they started to fall to the wayside. And then that's when like the people that continued sort of hung around. Mike wanted to run his own promotion. So we got together, we got a building in Pleasantville. We used a ring for a couple of times, the HWA ring. Finally, we got our own ring, brought that in, the APW ring that we still have to this day. Started booking, promoting our own shows, started off with a bunch of our yarder talent. But then we were sort of coming up right at the same time that CEW was training kids, training your Bogots, your Duke Cornells, yep. You know, those yep. guys, your Superflies, your Jay Fowlers. I tease him every time I see him on TV. I'm like, hey, remember that time where you put me over for like 3 months straight? Now you're on TV. Yeah. So those guys started coming in, and we gave them the freedom to be themselves to learn instead of like micromanaging from, and you'll get that a lot. And there are times where promotions, when they're training their kids, it's very hands-on. This is what we want you to do. But there's a point where that gets to be too detrimental to development. If you're not giving them opportunities in the ring to get any better, they're not going to learn. You learn more by doing in pro wrestling, I think, than anything else. Once you're beyond that stage of knowing how to do it, then we learn why we do it. And the best way to do that is in front of a live audience. So they would come up to me and Josh and Mike and be like, hey, what do you want us to do? I'm like, you guys got 15 minutes, just whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't care. Like, this is the easiest crowd to work. This is very old school wrestling fans. Make the mat make noise.
Yep.
Hit a slam, and that's going to pop more than any flippy dippies. So, like, those guys kind of came in, started honing their craft, and that's what APW became, was just a place for the young talent that wasn't getting opportunity elsewhere to make the most of the opportunities that they had.
So, with the guys that had left just because they were doing it for fun, were there any that you were just kind of sad to see go just because, like, they had potential?
Oh, absolutely. One of my best friends, Tyler Shelton, wasn't really a wrestling fan, but the rest of us all were. So he just kind of hung out and watched it. When he found out that we were putting APW together, you know, he kind of wanted to get involved. So we started training him up a little bit. He was, you know, really not an athlete. I don't think he played a whole lot of sports. He does hockey now, but he was just like, he had natural athletic ability.
Okay.
He had a decent look about him. He had an all right mind for it, and he was able to hit some pretty cool moves. Me and him, you know, we worked a few programs. We were able to put some fun stuff together. It got to a point where he was told by his employer at the time, hey, you're on our insurance. You can't do this. Like, you get hurt,
yep,
you lose your job, you lose your insurance. Sorry. So he had to like sort of back away from that point. But aside from that, the guys that sort of fell away that were doing it for fun, they're my best friends, still my best friends to this day. But I look back at that time period of the matches and the quality of the shows that we were putting on in front of an audience, and I can understand why a lot of the people in the business hated us. It wasn't necessarily the best product in the world out there. We had a lot of fun. We were entertaining. But when it comes down to actual wrestling, probably a reason that, like I said, a lot of the promoters at the time, we were very much the black sheep of the Midwest, Central Iowa indie wrestling scene.
I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
It was unlike anything I had ever seen. Like, I'd been to 3X Wrestling, and I think that was the first indie that I ever went to, starting in like maybe 08, 09. And you see your Jeremy Wyatts, who only, you know, got better with time.
Absolutely.
Mark Sterling, who's just built like a brick shit house. And those guys are awesome, but you go to APW and it's like, okay, you got your little family here in front of this crowd that, like, just not the biggest crowd, but just fucking loved you guys.
Yeah, they were, and the crowd was ravenous, man. It was that we had that weird, like, nothing else is going on in town, so let's go to the wrestling show.
Yep.
So it was mainly, you know, non-wrestling fans that were out there at these shows, but they were loud, they were vocal, they were into it. And like you mentioned, like, we had this locker room of guys that were over with this audience more so than when we brought in a name. I remember we brought in Eric Cannon once, and, you know, the thought was, hey, we'll get Cannon in here. He's a name. We all know him. It's great to give the guys that have been working here day one the opportunities to work these guys to continue to improve. And, like, no offense to Cannon, but we announced Eric Cannon, and, like, you could have heard a pin drop. The audience didn't care. They have no idea who it is. They didn't follow independent wrestling. They barely followed WWE. So there was no point in reaching out and bringing in those big names, which caused some controversy down the road. A longer story probably for another episode of this. I don't know if we'll get into it today or not.
Ooh, that's one of the things I was going to ask you about.
But yeah, so it was that fun environment where guys that are 115 pounds soaking wet can go out there and perform and live that dream and be entertaining and provide, you know, excitement for that crowd for the night. Guys are getting over there that aren't going to have the opportunity to get over anywhere else they work, either because of their size or their abilities or what they can do. Plus, you just had a bunch of dudes with a great mind for the business and a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just had fun. That's what it was. Ideas that were thrown out. Some of my favorite stuff we did in APW was the Homeless Express. Soup Kitchen Sean Nautilus, Homeless Brian Gott. those guys would come to the ring and just tattered clothes, and they would panhandle. They made more money off the fans some nights than like I paid them to wrestle. And that's not selling merch. That's just walking around with a cup, a collection cup. You know, they came to the ring a couple times in a shopping cart with a cardboard box with an address on it. And we did a whole gimmick where they won the tag team titles, but technically because they were homeless, they didn't have an actual residence. So they couldn't have gotten their wrestling license in the state of Iowa. So the titles were upheld. So we did like a best 2 out of 3 for, you know, over a course of a month. And that's something that we were doing different that you don't see on this level to this day a lot, that I'm sort of, now that I'm working with, you know, Magnum from a creative standpoint and a book promoting standpoint and agenting standpoint, that I'm really pushing for is storytelling. Like at the time, and you still have some old school indie promoters that, nope, our main event, we got a story, the rest of it's all filler. But I didn't like that. I don't like booking that. I'm an Attitude Era kid. You know, I grew up in the 90s with the Monday Night Wars, where every segment, every match, there was a story behind it. There was a reason why these guys were at each other's throats. There was something going on to intrigue you. And if you can captivate the audience that way, you can overlook some shortcomings when it comes to in-ring ability, or, you know, not having the best 5-star match or this, that, or the other. If the audience is excited, if they want to see the outcome of something, they're more engaged, they're more likely to buy a ticket than if you can hit a 450 senton splash off of the top rope. So
it would have been great to have them pawn off the titles.
I think we joked about that. There was a dog that showed up one time. Like, this dog, someone opened the door backstage to get some air, and this dog ran in. And next thing you know, the dog is at the ringside with Sean. Sean named him Bisquick, by the way. So we had Bisquick, the mascot for the tag team. They would eat, like, the condiments from the concession stand because they're so hungry. Sean literally was gagging one night as Brian was spoon feeding himself sour cream. Yeah. Yeah. So like we had a lot of fun with that gimmick, but it was just that sort of, it was their idea. Like they came to me and went, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think? I'm like, let's do it. I love it. Let's go have some fun with it. Create the freedom. The idea of the angle of them being stripped of the titles because they didn't have a legal residency. That was their idea. Like, I'm just giving these guys that are great people with great minds for one wrestling, but just storytelling and all these different layers of things that go into it on top of it, an opportunity to create and present. And that's where wrestling thrives, is you get those guys that are hungry for it. They want to do it. They want to be there. And that's how you really can separate who wants to improve and then who doesn't. It's not just who's spending the time in the gym or the ring or, you know, doing the seminars. It's who wants to come up with these ideas and these angles and these characters and this character development. And okay, how do we get to this point, or how do we do that? Those are the guys that you want, that I want to work with, that I want to have in a locker room, more so than the body guys or the move guys.
When I wrestled in 2015 for a short time after I trained with you, and we'll get into that more later, but I came back in 2018 and I got more opportunities than I ever should have with the level of talent that I had, which was very little.
Same
in 2015. And I came back and I said, I want to do more like story stuff. Now, I hadn't been in the business. There's no reason for, you know, Todd Countryman or anyone that's booking me to give me a story. So I said, fuck it, I'll just make up my own. And when I came back, I said, Donnie Pepper Cricket, you're the guy. Like, I've always wanted to wrestle you. And I just made up this story, like, for a free Union Park Des Moines, you know, Clowns at the Carousel show. Yeah. I was like, I've always been a big fan of yours. You always, like, you're bright colors. You're a big 400-pound guy wearing bright colors. And you have this, like, 80s pop icon gimmick. And that caught my eye. And, but you're getting up there in age, and I want to be the guy to take you out. Just like the simplest story, but give people a reason to care about our match.
And indie wrestling's weird, and it, like I said, it all depends on who you talk to. You do see now more, and I think the way social media is evolving and advancing, you know, TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff, and the ability to just get content out there easier. You know, back when we were doing APW, even, you know, that was 2007, 2008, you know, around then. Even then, social media wasn't as accessible. equipment wasn't as good. You couldn't just take a phone and instantly plug, you know, even back then, you know, I know kids, it's, well, that didn't seem like that long ago, but we were still kind of in the Stone Age with flip phones and stuff like that. Like you couldn't just record a match on your phone and then instantly plug it in. What were those little cameras, like the handheld?
Oh, I had one. Yeah. Flips.
The flips. Yep. Like that was right when the flips were coming out. So if you had a flip, cool, you could put your match up almost instantly, but the rest of us, yeah, sorry. So there was a lot more that went into it from that sort of standpoint. So now you're getting the ability for wrestlers to be able to put something like that together to kind of have a story and an idea or a reason of why this match is taking place. Because I'm not a big fan of matches for the sake of matches. Like in the right crowd, in the right atmosphere, sure, that's great. But Midwest, there's still that layer of we want to be entertained. We want to be taken on a ride. You know, Magnum Pro, we sold almost 200 tickets within the first 2 days of announcing the upcoming show this month. Within the first hour, we had 170 sold, and that was just announced from the fans that were in attendance.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't even posted on social media. It's because there have been these ever-evolving stories that are about to culminate. We're getting to that point. And you, like I said, you don't see that so much on the independent level, especially some of the smaller independents where this is sort of treated like weekly television. Instead of a once a week show, you've got a monthly show to entertain your audience, and then you start developing that story, and you know we're going to give this 4 months to develop these stories, we're going to have this mega event that's going to pay it off, and then we're going to start all over again and continue to go that route, as opposed to just who do we got on the card tonight, okay, this guy versus this guy, this guy versus this guy, well, he went over last, okay, we want to do just like no filler, just a reason for everything to happen from top to bottom on the show. And that's where I'm enjoying wrestling right now.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Midwest fan base a little bit, because you had mentioned earlier, you know, they're more about story, and they're more about, you know, just make a lot of noise and be big and characters. And they don't really care much about the flippy dippy stuff. And you're going to hate me saying this because I'm a talentless fucking hack, but your style influenced me to become a professional wrestler. Because when I saw you, I was like, okay, here's a guy that's smaller than I am, and I'm already pretty small for pro wrestling, but he's not doing the typical cruiserweight style. He's, I'm guessing you're like, what, 140 pounds?
Oh, thank you so much for that. that is a blessing. At my heaviest, I was at like 135. Right now, I'm right around 115. I quit drinking a year and a half ago, and I actually lost weight.
Yeah.
I dropped like 15 pounds the first 2 weeks. I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that those calories were what was sustaining me at this level.
Yeah.
Metabolism is insane. But yes, no. When I was in APW wrestling full time, I was probably like 112.
But I watched you wrestle, and I'm like, this is a very small guy, but he wrestles like a heavyweight. Like, he's not doing top rope stuff. It's a lot of like, it's stuff that it's more character work, and it's more getting the crowd involved and that sort of thing. And that inspired me, because I was like, well, I'm 5'7". At the time I was 185 pounds, but I'm a bitch. I don't want to get on the top rope and do, you know, moonsaults and shit like that. Like, I want to wrestle like a lot of mat work, or like I want to throw lariats. Like, I don't want to do the typical cruiserweight stuff.
So for one, I didn't do that shit because I couldn't, you know, so why try? If you can't land it, don't do it. And that's, you know, the Paul Heyman mindset behind things is always hide the negatives, accentuate the positives.
Yep.
So the more that I continue to progress, because at first it was me trying to do a lot of that, you know, the rope walk with the Ranas and the top rope stuff. And I remember one time I threw like the worst spinning heel kick, but I hit like a really cool drop kick afterwards. So Zach Thompson pulls me aside. He's like, hey, the spin heel kick looked like shit. You got 2 feet off the ground. Your drop kick was amazing. You got up there. He's like, don't throw those, hit drop kicks instead. I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm a drop kick guy now. So it was just a lot of that learning what I could do well and doing more of that, as opposed to trying to be what, and that's what a lot of young guys get into, is they get into, you know, this is what I like, this is what I like to see, so I'm going to go out there and do that sort of a thing. Unless you've got someone there correctly steering you in the right direction, not just shitting on what you're doing, telling you why you shouldn't do that, you should do this instead, as opposed to just not, hey, don't do that, because that move's done on TV a lot better than you can do it. And you know exactly who I'm talking about and what I'm talking about with that reference.
Yep.
But it's that sort of idea of what can I do to set myself apart from everything else on the card. And for me, it was very much story work. It was very much character driven. I am instantly getting sympathy from a fan the moment anybody touches me because I'm built like I am.
Yeah.
Some of the favorite things that I used to love to do is take a big move and you take that bump. And as you're coming back up, you do this and you're reaching for that kid in the first row and you make eye contact with him. Like, he's your only hope. You're my savior. And then you just collapse back down. So it's one of those things where it's just engaging that audience, knowing how to work it. And that comes from the psychology standpoint, the storytelling aspect of things is just that connection. If you can make that connection with the audience, and that's something I was always very good at doing, was getting them either behind me or getting them to hate me.
Yeah.
But as long as I'm getting that reaction, I really don't care which way or the other it goes, as long as we're having fun with it. And that's what they wanted to see. That's why they wanted to see me, because they could root for me. They could get behind me. They could hate me, whatever it was. I made it very easy for them to follow what I was doing. And then it comes down to, okay, how am I going to do moves on someone like a Donnie Pepper Cricket?
Yep.
Everything I have to do then makes sense in, you know, a real fight situation. And that's where that level, again, of storytelling comes into play.
One of my most beloved memories of wrestling in the short amount of time that I did it was getting the chance to meet the guy who taught all of us how to sell as a babyface, Ricky Morton. And that reaching out and making eye contact with a young fan in the front row, I feel like a lot of us learned that from him in the 80s. And when he came and he wrestled for 3X Wrestling, he wrestled the perfect style for those Midwest fans, because 5 minutes after the opening bell, he and Rory Fox did not lock up for probably 5 minutes, which is an eternity in pro wrestling.
Especially on an indie show when you've got like maybe 10 minutes from curtain to curtain to get all your shit in.
And they ate it up, man. That, like, you can go out there and you can do all your moonsaults and your 450s. And then Ricky Morton wrestles and they pop the loudest for the first body slam of the match, which in a Ricky Morton match at the age he is now might be one of two body slams the entire match.
Yeah.
You know,
he's only got so much left in the bump card there. And that's, you know, you watch that old school style and that's a lot of what it was back then. And that's why he's still doing it today at the level that he's able to do it, because he didn't necessarily put his body through all that. And, you know, I love when we had Bobby Eaton come in for a camp and a seminar. For one, he thought that Skylar Pierce was Jim Ross and kept calling him JR all night. So that was funny. The other was the fact that, just listening to him, and here's someone who's world traveled, you know, you think best wrestling tag teams of all time, his name almost always comes up, whether and it doesn't matter who his partner was, whether it was a version of the Midnight Express, if it was Cordry, or if it was, you know, Stan Lane, or when he was working with Anderson and the Dangerous Alliance and all that fun stuff. But to hear him talk about his favorite moment in wrestling being working with William Regal, and they're doing that Blue Bloods and they're trying to make Bobby Eaton, like, and again, it's like, here's a guy that, you know, fought the Road Warriors in a scaffolding match, you know, one of the biggest matches to date at that time. And one of his most fondest memories is some fun promo work that he did with William Regal. So that's the stuff that even gets the old guys invested and excited, is when you can throw out those fun angles and have some, you know, enjoyment in what you're doing.
So you're still wrestling actively, but you start training other guys. My dumbass comes through about 2015, and I start training with you in that APW ring, which is still my favorite ring to bump in.
It's like bumping on a cloud.
It's the softest ring I've ever been in, and I don't know why. What makes
it goes together only one way.
Yep.
You cannot put it together any other way other than the way it's supposed to go together. If you don't do that, you have to start all over again. It's fickled, but it is an amazing mat to bump on.
Yeah. I love that ring so much. And then it's kind of a culture shock when you get asked to be on a 3XW show and then you bump in that ring, which is still like not bad,
a terrible ring, but no.
But you're like, oh, that's different body.
I used to joke when we were training kids in day one and we're bumping everybody. I'm like, Mark, this is a bad idea. Like, they shouldn't learn to bump in this ring.
Yeah.
Like, we should get a stiffer ring for them to bump in.
Yeah. But, trained with you and much to like what you were saying, Mark and the other former trainees that were always there for training every week taught us how to do the moves. And I credit you a lot for teaching us when to do the moves, why to do the moves. Was that something that consciously you're thinking about when you're training guys is I'm going to focus more on the why and the psychology of wrestling than the moves itself?
That sort of just fell into that a little bit, I think. You know, when we sat down to start the training camp, it's I had a building, I had a ring. They wanted to run a school. I'm like, cool, let's partner up. Let's do it. We never really sat down to discuss, you know, okay, your role is going to be this, your role is going to be that. It's sort of just things as Mark and, you know, some of the veteran trainees and some of the guys that had already been through the class that were there helping out. When they're getting through the how we're doing things, I'm just watching and I'm picking up on little things. I'm noticing things. And then I'm able to like pull you aside or, you know, some of the other guys aside and go, okay, this was cool, but do this instead or try this instead. Just all those different hows. You know, one of my favorite things I like to tell guys is when we're teaching lockups, you got big guys that either come in way down here. It's like, you're a huge guy. Don't make him come up to your level. Don't come down to his level. And then you've got just regular size guys that are still scrunched up. And I'm like, watch Randy Savage wrestle. Yep. Savage was a big dude, but he wasn't Hogan big. You know, he wasn't Andre big. He wasn't big for that era of wrestling big. So when you watch him walk around the ring, especially before that lockup, he's almost on tiptoes. He's always peacocked out. He's always making himself look bigger. So that's part of the things that I wanted to make sure that I was explaining to you guys as you were learning was, hey, do these things. It's all about presentation at this point. Moves are cool, but if you don't know why you're doing it or if you're not making them look a certain way, they're just wasted. So you're getting the most out of it if you're able to present it from a, you know, that sort of standpoint.
You've had, when did you start or when did they start at your building with the APW ring training?
I think you were like the second or third class to come through. I only did it about 4 years maybe down there. But we started doing that probably 2014, I think, 2015, around then.
Yeah, 2015 would have been my class. I think you did one before that, which would have been like, I can't remember his name. It would have been like Sentai's class.
Yeah, it was Sentai. It was Brett Hadley. It was Alex, who then went on to train with Black and Brave. Xander. Xander Killen. He's been, I don't know if he's still as active, but there for a while he was killing it on the Midwest scene, and I was very proud of him for that. There's a lot of guys that came through that are still going that I am proud of, and I tell them that. I told you that, you know, hey, congratulations, saw it, keep doing me proud. You know, I get that fun, like, dad feeling when I see, you know, one of my students, you know, with the belt, or, you know, hey, I did this big match, or I worked this guy from TV. It's a cool feeling for me.
I know it's like asking who your favorite child is, but is there any names that stick out of the classes that you had of trainees that you're like, God, they've gone on to do big things, great things here in the Midwest? Or
it's even there. Bigger? There are a lot of guys that have gone on to do some good things. Like I said, Xander, very happy for him. And we talk about the guys that want it and opposed to the guys that don't want it. There's right away an instance when you start to get into training is you can tell who thought this would be a fun idea or who really wants to be a professional wrestler and wants to travel and wants to put the time and the energy in to do it. All those guys that have continued to want to do it, I'm very proud of. Kyle being one of those. Kyle Loy continues to do it. Yeah. Battle some injuries. Shane, another guy that and it's fun when you start talking to these guys and you realize that paths have crossed before, you know, a mutual friend, or, you know, you've got, you know, the same interest, or you've been to this show, or you've bumped into each other at a concert or something beforehand. Shane's one of those guys that, like, all of a sudden we start talking and it's like, well, you know this guy, well, yeah, I know that guy, and like we've got all this just like weird random mutual friends that we've never interacted with before, but somehow here we are. So yeah, all those guys that continued on and, you know, continue to strive. And I know everybody's got different reasons for falling out or, you know, getting away from the business or this, that, or the other. But the guys that always wanted to continue to improve and go out there and have done some great things, those are, I'm proud of all my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very dad answer for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy. Kyle was in my class and he started just blonde, beautiful, no tattoos. Yeah. And then now
look at him.
Yeah. Just degenerate. Just tattooed up, a fucking degenerate.
That's what happens when you get to hang around with me in the wrestling ring. You start traveling the road, and then all the guys that didn't drink that now, you know, I'll never
it's a problem.
Exactly. I'll never forget I found out Malachi had started, and he's a guy that I'm proud of. Indirectly, not one of my official students, but Malachi, the Carver, had gone through some stuff with 3XW at the time, really before that APW had started their sort of working relationship with 3X. At that time, it's like, you can't work there. if you're on our show, you cannot work there. Jimmy Rockwell is one of my best friends in the business, a guy that I would have loved to have the opportunity to work with more, especially book more.
Yeah.
You know, but it was one of those, hey, I cannot work there. Like, they trained me. They will not book me anymore. I'm like, I understand it. I hate it, but I get it. So yeah, so he was one that sort of came down to APW, started training, helping set the ring up, would drive down there, would be there with me early, and, you know, credited to having his first professional match with me, and then watching him go on and continue to do the things. And then I sit back and I listen to him talk about how much he hates the business now. And I'm like, yep, you sound a lot like I did. You remember hearing all this come out of my mouth?
Yep.
You know, on show day when the ring isn't quite set up right or ready, or there's still chairs that need to be put out, or there's no line at the door and you're just mad and angry. I was an asshole on show days. I hated it. And there's a reason that I no longer book or run. And it's fun when I go back to 3XW now, or when I'm back at Magnum and we're doing stuff, and, you know, me and Joey are helping with creative, and we're helping agent, and we're putting stuff together, and we're doing all this, and we're looking at the promoter and the booker, who's kind of off in his own corner worrying about what he's got going on tonight.
Yep.
And we're like, see, this is the way it should be. Not on just one guy to do it. The cat's jumping right through the shot here. I love it.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah, tope suicido there, right through the ropes. Yeah. But yeah, it's just that I hated doing both. So rarely when I was actually booking and running APW was I on the card that night. There were opportunities when I did wrestle, and that was if we needed a body, or if I had a story going, or there was something that we wanted to do. I worked my brother quite a bit because it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been wrestling our entire lives. We could call it in the ring. But yeah, just being able to separate and differentiate from that stuff was just so much less off of my plate, I guess.
You've talked a lot about the camaraderie and the fun you had backstage at APW shows. I think you alluded to this. I would assume it's the same story I'm going to ask you about. So there was a weekend.
This yep.
was probably 2013?
Yep. 2012.
2012. Okay.
Yep.
So I was hosting Buck and Boom's Biracial Body Slam Hour, my first podcast ever. And we actually...
it's a great name, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
The logo was pretty cool, too.
It's pretty sick, yeah. So we actually had Malachi Matthews on, like, the first episode of the podcast. Our first episode of the podcast was about this incident. Yeah. So there was a weekend where it was Friday night, 3XW, Saturday in Omaha at Magnum or Council Bluffs, and then Sunday afternoon at APW. And it was Davey Richards, who was probably one of the biggest stars in independent wrestling
was,
at the time.
When we booked it, he was the Ring of Honor world champion.
Yeah. Kyle O'Reilly, who was just coming up. He was like a student of his. And then a veteran who helped train Davey, Tony Cozina. From everything I've heard, those three, everything went fine at 3XW on Friday night. Saturday at Magnum, some tension, and then for whatever reason, it all went to shit on Sunday.
It sure did.
I never asked you about this personally. From your perspective, what happened?
So, me and Jason Strife, you know, Nate, he loved APW. Nate, we brought him in. He was available. Fowler was training with him at the time. He's like, hey, Nate wants to work. Can you bring him in? You know, whatever. So we found room for him on the card. Obviously, we found room for Jason Strife.
Yeah.
Oh, Jason, he wants to work here? Never in a million years would I have thought that he would want to come work here in Milo, Iowa. But sure enough. So all it took was that one show. Like you said, you experience that. You get to hang out with it. You fall in love with the APW locker room, with the show, with the crowd, with all that. So he came down, instantly fell in love with it. It was fun. It was different. It wasn't what you were getting when you went to work anywhere else. You had the freedom and stuff to do like that. There was no headaches. It was drama-free pro wrestling, which is very weird to say. Mm-hmm. So me and him were pretty close. He knew that I was running things at APW at that time. He hit me up with the idea of, hey, I've got the possibility Davey's free. What do you think? You know, I'm talking to 3X. If we all three run it, we can, you know, maybe get the price down and decide the other. And he told me he's bringing Kyle O'Reilly with him. I had just started watching Ring of Honor. As an independent wrestling booker, was not up to date with the product, never really into it. It wasn't really my style. Like I said, I'm a show kind of a guy. I want the drama, the idea, you know, the storylines. But had just started watching Ring of Honor. Kyle O'Reilly was just getting started, and I was very impressed with what Kyle was doing. So for me, that weekend is like, yeah, it's cool. We're getting the ROH World Heavyweight Champion in here. We're getting Davey in here, but Kyle's the guy I want to see. Like, so let's bring that in. Let's make it happen. I'm also drunk at the time that he's texting me, so I'm ready to agree to anything. I'm like, hey, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. Sounds great. Awesome. So the week of the show, the Tuesday before the Friday night at 3X Wrestling, Davey is hitting Nate up for more money. Davey, and Nate's ready to cancel the thing right now. He's like, it's Tuesday. I know we got these three shows. Like, I'm ready to cancel. Like, they're being dicks about it. Like, he's hit me up for more money. He wants trans. We already agreed on it. Like, it was in the original price for the whole weekend. And I'm like, man, just like, yeah, you know, like, hey, if you can push the issue, tell him, hey, we already agreed on this. Like, but like, let's don't cancel it. Don't cancel it. You know, I'm excited to see these guys. And more importantly for me, it was giving my roster the opportunity to work with these names, giving Duke Cornell the opportunity to go out there and have a match with Davey Richards. I knew he wasn't going to sell tickets in Milo, Iowa. I knew that those guys were not going to sell out a 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon show. I knew I was going to lose my ass on that show, yeah. But it was to bring them in, give them the opportunity to work our guys. The three promotions actually coordinated together to know who was working who on each other's shows to get the most out of that, to get that talent. You know, sometimes you'll bring guys in, and if, say, Jason Strife's on all three nights, he's working that name all three nights. Yep. But this was sort of different. We were scrambling everything around, and Nate had, Ryan Kidd with him, who had been training out in California. He's going on to doing some great things if you're following up with what he's doing down in Mexico and with his lucha work. Fantastic. I'm very happy for him. At the time, he was like 15.
I love Ryan.
Yeah. So they're already starting shit the week before the show. So now, like, my red flag's up. Like, I'm like, okay, let's see what this is going on. Davey has this reputation already of being difficult to work with, of not showing up, of holding promoters hostage, this, that, or the other. So now I'm already kind of like, let's see what we get. So Friday, they roll into town, and I get it to Friday's show, I hate Friday shows, especially, you're coming from work or you're traveling, you got to take time off, this, that, or the other. But they roll into downtown Des Moines maybe 10 minutes before doors open. So it's one of those, okay, cool, like, they got here, it's 10 minutes, Tony's on the pre-show working somebody. So from what I'd heard, everything was cool backstage. I don't even think I was doing commentary yet. I was just sort of hanging out that night. I went up to try to introduce myself to him, kind of, hey, who's this guy, which I get a lot. It's fine. I know it. I don't look like a typical guy that you would see in a pro wrestling locker room. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those type of a thing. So introduce him, say, hey, I'm the promoter for Sunday, looking forward to it. I'm doing the training camp with you guys tomorrow. I'm on the Magnum show, I'll see you out there. So we get to Saturday. They are over an hour late to get there to the training. Stripes already just got us warming up. So we spent probably an entire afternoon doing like MMA drills. Like, it's neck rolls, it's stretches, very minimal actual wrestling training. Stuff that for a group of guys that have already been trained that are working, this is elementary stuff. This is like day one training camp things we were doing, lockups and forearms and shit like that. So real, nothing that you're really learning or taking anything away from it. Kind of just intro to wrestling training, which wasn't what I expected. Because I had just done, before that we had brought in Joey Ryan, who we're not supposed to talk about anymore for obvious reasons. But at that time, this is when he was on the top of his game. He was everywhere. And he ran a training camp that was very influential on me. It was, you guys work your matches, and I'll tell you how to improve on them, and I'll share some knowledge. And it's one of those things that I learned. He's like, you got that energy, but you're losing that fight. And especially as a baby face. So now if you watch some of my later stuff after that, I am never stationary. You're never pulling me to my feet. I am climbing up you. Yeah. I'm crawling. I'm scratching. I'm reaching. I'm giving you a shot to the midsection, trying to fight up, trying to keep that going so the audience has a reason to believe in me. If I'm laying there dead, they're not going to care. You're not going to get that slow clap build.
One of the biggest things I learned from you is don't die.
Yeah, and I learned that from him. So I was looking forward to the Davey camp to learn, some more knowledge. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this is what it is, whatever. So that goes on. Ryan Kidd had posted a promo. He's working Tony Cozina at the Magnum show. He had done a promo where he called himself the fakest fake, which Tony instantly hated.
Yeah.
You've got a veteran. You don't use the word fake in wrestling. Instead of just pulling him aside or talking to him about it or giving him a couple stiff shots, goes out there, completely changes what they had planned to do, to a point where I didn't even realize that this wasn't the plan. Sort of just messes with Ryan for the first part.
She just goes out there and beats the shit out of him.
And it's like, first it starts as like an actual wrestling match, like an actual, like, collegiate style wrestling match.
Keep in mind, Ryan's 15 at the time.
Yeah. Has no idea like how to react, how to handle what the situation is in there. Has never had a problem like this. A great wrestler. So it's interesting. In the meantime, you've got Davey backstage being an asshole, screaming respect over the curtain at all this. the finish of this match is like three pile drivers, and Tony is not protecting this kid at all. He's not cushioning him. You can see Tony coming down with the kid's head between his legs. The head's obviously hitting first, and he's pushing his head down to make it get to that point too. Again, watching this happen, did not know that this was a shoot. Mm-hmm. I thought this is just the match they worked together. This is what they worked out, you know, whatever. It's a clash of styles. I didn't find that out until after everything went down Sunday. Had I known that then, Sunday probably would have gone the same way, but it would have been a little different.
Sure.
So we roll into Sunday, again, early afternoon show. Now I'm getting text messages that Tony hurt himself. Tony doesn't want to work the singles match. He wants to work, can we do an eight man with all of us together? I'm like, yeah, we could. I'm like, but I've only got X amount of guys on the roster right now. I've only got X amount of guys booked. So if I completely change all this, now we're throwing all you guys into one match. I'm losing four matches. My match goes from six to three match card. And like, I don't want to put that show out
what
there.
What was the original plan? Because I know it was Davey and Duke.
Strife was going to work Kyle O'Reilly, which would have been an amazing match. Tony was working Bogart.
Okay.
And Ryan Kidd was going to team with Malachi. They were working the tag champs. I was going to get Davey's trainee that he had on with him, that he brought to all the shows, and get him on the show too. So like, I had this plan, and these guys, and that's what I kept stressing to them. Like, you know, I'm trying to get the guys to rub, you know, I'm thanking them for what they do for me. And it's a lot of back and forth. It's okay, we can do that. I don't want to do that. Okay, we can do that. Well, we'll talk about it when you get here. All afternoon this goes on, to the point where we're now like 5 minutes from showtime. And now I'm getting texts from Davey, like, hey, man, what's going on? At this point, I'm livid. I'm just pissed at Tony. I said something about, like, hey, so much for respect. Because at that point, I thought they weren't showing me respect. I get it. I'm not world traveled. I'm not the guy in there. But I'm the guy that's paying you to come to town to do this job. So at the same time, there has to be some kind of compromise, some kind of middle ground. And we had compromised a couple of different times. And then it was, Davey, don't even show up. I'm texting Davey directly. I'm like, hey, man, what's your PayPal? Like, I'm sorry that this went down this way. My doors are open. This crowd is expecting a show that I am scrambling to put together. I need to come up with a plan, and I'm making the decision now. Sorry, just keep driving. They've been telling me for hours we're on our way. We're 20 minutes out. We're lost again, this, that, or the other. Just all this stuff. So I tell them to hit the bricks, get the road. I've got, you know, someone watching the side door just in case they show up. They come in the front door, right back into the locker room. Davey points at me, pulls me out. You know, Nate walks out. I wish Abu was still there. He wishes he was still there. You talk to Abu about it to this day. He's like, I wish I had not left.
For those who don't know who Abu is, give some context to Abu, what this Colossus, man looks like and his unbelievable size.
Abu Colossus. Very large, very powerful.
That's his name?
Yes, that's his wrestling name.
Very black.
Very large. He's also a teacher, an elementary school teacher, so it's hilarious. One of the strongest men I have ever been in the ring with, and I was his partner. We did a lot of fun back and forth stuff. He snapped the like elastic band and drawstring out of my trunks one night. We did the high five, and I sold like my hand hurt because he's so big. And then he did like the big pat on the back, and it knocked me clear over. And then he just reached down and grabbed my tights to pull me up and just snapped everything on the way up. So that happened.
He and his tag partner both, what was his name?
Max.
Max. Yes. Max Magnus?
Yes.
Two of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
But also, you don't, so intimidating.
Yeah. You don't, like, I don't think he would ever, like, also, listen, he did just... At this time, he'd also just gotten a bar fight like two nights before. I'm like, who picks a bar fight with this guy for one? So yeah, he had left earlier because it's a Sunday.
Get a few drinks in Corey.
Hey, a few drinks to do a lot of things to a lot of different people. But so he had already left. So Davey's out here and he's just reading me the riot act. And he's like, you're not a pro wrestler. I'm like, I know I'm not a pro wrestler, but I'm the promoter. Like, mm-hmm. I booked this show. He's like, Cornette would tell me to take you around back and make an example of you right now. You know, Strive's out there talking to me. He's throwing all these threats at me, you know. And Cozina's trying to mean mug me, standing a step above me, but he's still shorter than I am, which is hilarious. So yeah, all this going on. I'm like, you guys, like, again, like, I'm just like, whatever, you know. He's like, we're here now, we'll wrestle. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I've already told him you're not coming. How do we, you know, spin this again, trying to make it all make sense. You know, I told him you weren't coming because you weren't fucking coming. The audience is now this way or the other. So they wanted to take Duke, who now is just super heel, was supposed to be him and Davey. Now the story is Duke's mad at me because of the way things went down, even though I had nothing to do with it. He'd come out, he'd powerbombed me earlier in the night. didn't know it was coming, so I didn't protect my head. Got a little bit of a concussion that night. So that happens. Strife makes the save. Now my main event is Duke and Strife. So Davey's idea is to then throw himself into the mix, have Kyle come out, and now we've got a tag team match. And I'm going, well, that doesn't make sense for my audience. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, how about you come out to make the save, or how about Kyle comes out to help Duke, and then we get you to come out to help Nate. Mm-hmm. And then now we've got a tag team match that makes sense. Right. It's like, hey, we weren't getting along, but he powerbombed me earlier. Now he's got some backup. Now, reluctantly, against everything, I have to have you come out. I want you to come make the save now. So this is the idea, and he boxed at it again. No, we can't do that. He's my training buddy. And I look at him dead in the eye. I go, no one in that building knows you are training Kyle O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. No one, like, no offense, no one knows who you guys are. This audience does not follow independent wrestling. They do not go deeper than what they see on USA.
Yep.
Like, that's it. They don't even watch Impact. Like, this is the audience. So again, doesn't want to do it. Wants the money up front, all this, out of the other. So I am just beyond an emotional wreck right now. Like, anger to the point where I'm in tears. Like, I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm just that angry and, you know, frustrated about everything. He comes over, sort of apologizes. We smooth things out a little bit. He's like, hey, man. I'm like, hey, look, I told you I was going to pay you. Like, I'm sorry this went down. I wasn't getting anywhere with Tony. He's like, yeah, you know, that's just Tony. He can be kind of a hard ass. So I give Davey the envelope. Kyle's all ready to go. Davey looks down at his wrists and go, I forgot my wrist tape. Walks out the door, gets in the car, and leaves. Kyle has no idea what's going on. He just looks around as he's doing the Kyle O'Reilly shadow boxing that you see. That's real life. That's him. That's what he does. So he's doing that. Unbeknownst to us, Tony Kazina had gathered up all the bags. Him, Davey's trainee were already in the car. So the moment Davey goes, oh, I forgot my wrist tape, he books it out the door. Kyle follows reluctantly, and that's it. They just walk out of the fucking show. All the money in hand. Don't do anything to try and teach me a lesson.
In the Iowa, like, Eastern Nebraska wrestling circles, I forgot my wrist tape was the dad's going out for cigarettes and milk joke.
Yep, forever.
For years because of this incident.
Holy
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, Preston Maxwell's backstage at Magnum with, like, different color wrist tapes with a sign that says wrist tape in case you forgot yours, like, hanging it up for people to use to reel. So, not the end of the story, though. So that happens. I'm livid. You know, Davey's blowing me up. He's like, you know, you insulted us. You told us this, that, or the other. You just didn't want to pay us because it wasn't a draw. I'm like, these were all things that I knew coming into it. You were in town Friday night. No one is going to come back around on a Sunday afternoon to see you again.
Yep.
Like, this is what it is. Everyone that wanted to see you had already done it. Now you're just working the APW audience.
Yep.
And in showtime that they're, it's on a different day than they're used to, at a different time than they're used to. I had people show up at 6 o'clock when we normally open doors. Like, what happened? I'm like, oh, sorry, the show was, it's over already.
Yeah.
You know, go home. So then we find out after this that everything that Tony had did to Ryan was legitimate. Like, none of that was planned. This was all off the cuff. This was all a shoot on this 16-year-old kid. Fox finds out. This is when Ring of Honor had just bought Sinclair Broadcasting.
Oh.
Or Sinclair just bought Ring of Honor.
Fox the network.
Fox network.
For whatever reason, yeah. I thought you were talking about Rory Fox. No. I was like, what?
No. No, Rory Fox, 3XW champion at the time, had the long blonde hair. It was a weird phase. Rory looked much better with the short hair.
Yeah.
So the next day.
Rapid fucking delivery.
Yeah, the next day, because this is blowing up on social media, you know, Kevin Owens is finding out about it. Kevin Steen at the time, he's tweeting at us about it because all Davey did in the training camp was shit all over Owens and his style of wrestling and what he does and his body and his build. And it's kind of funny. This is the guy that then went on to, you know, main event WrestleMania against Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
Davey didn't make it out in NXT.
Right.
So, you know, take whoever's opinion and advice for what it's worth there at that point. So it's blown up. This is going everywhere. We were in Pro Wrestling Illustrated's year-end reviews. Davey Richards was awarded the Douchebag of the Year award because of this. You know, APW is in there. Adrenaline Pro Wrestling name mentioned in this article alongside Jason Strife and a brief story of the incident. So Kyle sends me a message on Facebook. hey, man, I am so sorry. He's like, I had no idea that was going on. He's like, I had no part of that. He's like, I feel terrible. I got $50 out of that deal. I want to send it to you. Can I do that? I'm like, man, the apology's enough for me. You are the reason I booked this weekend. You're the reason that I wanted to see this. Like, I wanted to see you live and in person. Just keep it. I appreciate it, but it's already money lost. He's like, I consciously cannot do that. He's like, buy a flat of beer for your mates. I forget, he's very Canadian. He's like, so whatever you guys gonna do, is like, I'm sending it to you. I cannot, like, I talked about it with my wife. Like, I cannot keep this. I'm like, all right, cool, man. I appreciate it. Here's my PayPal. A little bit goes by. I'm getting messages from Davey now, who has to give me my money back. Sinclair Broadcasting is threatening to pull him off of Ring of Honor Television that they are now carrying on Fox if he does not give me my money back.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yep. I don't think I've ever said that out loud to too many people either, but that's what went down, is they found out, hey, we don't need this kind of publicity mm-hmm. on our program or associated with what we're doing. He's like, you need to give it back or you're not wrestling here anymore, basically. Also was the weekend that caused his school not to open, because he was also in town trying to promote his wrestling school. You're not going to get a lot of guys want to train to wrestle with you, for one, when they find out that you are legitimately trying to injure 14-year-old, 15-year-old kids.
Yep.
Two, you are also out there not really training or teaching these guys who paid you their money anything new. And then you're just an asshole to work with on top of that. So,
holy shit. Yeah,
story not over yet.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Not too many people know about what came down the road a few months after that. Now, we've got all this sort of groundswell of all this, that, or the other. Guess who's hitting Jason Strife up wanting to pay off on all this now?
Tony?
Davey Richards.
Oh, okay.
Davey wants to come out. He wants to come back. Pay me. I'll come back. We'll have a match. You know, we can make some money off of this, the way the old business mindset went.
Sure.
And Nate was close to doing it. There was a few times that Nate wanted to bring Davey back in, but instantly, like you said, the locker room, you know, this was known for so long that this happened, that the sheer mention of his name in an Iowa locker room, if any of those three promotions that were involved that weekend, quickly shut down.
Yep.
To the point where I'm getting messages from guys that are on the Magnum roster at the time that they're sort of talk about maybe this is going to happen. Guys are threatening to no show that show if they Nate brings him in. So Nate always stuck by it, never went back to it. But yeah, he sort of saw all what happened, and he's not wrong. We probably could have made a lot of money off of that weekend. And I'm like, yeah, I could do it. That one of the swerves of swerves where I, you know, cost Jason Strife this match. And, you know, it's because I was following your advice that this happened. But that whole weekend happened, and it really sucked because it killed my love for the business. Like, I was just done after that. I was getting lazy as a promoter, lazy as a booker. You know, attendance was down. Like, show-wise, I don't know if anybody ever really noticed, the talent never really noticed, but, like, I wasn't getting out to promote the way that I was. I wasn't getting out to flyer, because back then you had to flyer. It was old school. Yep. You had Facebook, but you couldn't just, like, hop on and find stuff that you were looking for. So, yeah, I hated it. I hated booking after that. I hated running shows after that. Yeah.
It's... We're in the process of promoting our first live show for the podcast. It'll be like a live podcast and a live band. It's exhausting.
It is. There's so much goes into it from day of to, and then this is also the same time that the state of Iowa is now changing regulations and laws.
Sure.
So there's more hoops to jump through for one to promote a show. And then the last few that I promote went like this. I'm like, well, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done with it. And then that's when Mark and Corey kind of got involved more. We were pairing up some more. They brought me in to do some commentary. I wound up taking over commentary, which was fun. So there was like a long time before I was like enjoying wrestling again from a being involved standpoint after that incident.
You being the guy that we, as your trainees, always went to for the when do you do this and why do you do this? Now you're getting to pass that knowledge on to guys backstage at Magnum.
Yeah.
Is it fun for you to kind of be in that backstage role, but not as the promoter to get to do the things
absolutely.
You love?
I love it. It's like, I was telling Joey about it, because it sort of started as a joke. Joey has been involved since Nate's passing. Joey was one of the guys that Nate selected to continue the mantle for Magnum. I'm going through myself in my personal life. My free time's opened up. So now I'm like, you know, I'm going to go to a show. I'm going to check it out. So I hop in the car with Brian and Fowler, and we hit the road, and we're driving. And I'm kind of just hanging there, and Joey walks in a suit. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? The Joe Dozer's in a suit. I don't get it. He's like, man, I'm just working the gimmick. He's like, I figure if I show up in a suit and look important, they'll give me something to do, you know, trying to play this, you know, Joe, you know, for the younger generation, like the current generation, I guess it's the Hurricane Helms and the Jamie Nobles. You know, before that, it was the Joey and Jamie, you know, us growing up, it was Patterson and Briscoe.
Yep.
The guys that were the old wrestlers that are now in the suits that come up, you know, Tony Guerrero come out for the polo parts and, you know, the agent and the booking stuff of that. So I'm sitting there bullshitting with Joey. There's a three-way match going on that night for the Top Gun title at Magnum, and they're having a tough time coming up with a few different spots. So I'm just listening, and I'm not giving too much advice yet. I'm just kind of going, why don't you do this? This is what I would do. There, you know, there's talk about, you know, it's something dirty that the heel can do. I'm like, why do you want to do that? Like, what are you going to get to? Where's it going after that? So then it's working backwards from there, what you can do to get to that point. So I come up with a really hot finish. You know, the crowd loves it. They're standing on their feet, and I'm just like grinning ear to ear. I'm like, this is awesome. This is a great feeling to have my idea executed out there by the talent that can do it. To just that reaction was just amazing. And Joey's like, that was hot. It's like, I want you here. So Joey walks up to the promoter. He goes, hey, what'd you think of that finish on that match? And he goes, man, I loved it. He's like, you know who came up with that idea? He's like, who did it? He's like, Jeremy. He's like, you think he wants to come back? He's like, yeah. Yeah, I think he does. So I just showed up, gave a few ideas, and I haven't left. But it's been fun to just sort of help out where I can, work with these ideas, work with the creative team, come up with direction, you know, where we want to go. You know, we're trying to fill 400 seats for our next show without a name, which is a bold task.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes you get to these bigger indie shows and it's okay, who's going to be there? Who's the guy on TV that we've seen that's going to be coming in? You know, we had Mike Bennett a couple of months ago. Mike Bennett, loved that guy. One of the best dudes in wrestling. But it's just one of those, not that we don't need a name, but we're getting there by story. We're developing these stories in these contexts. You know, even some of the stuff that we sort of crammed into a one show thing, we were able to tell that story in the last show to now people are buying tickets to see TJ Benson rip Alvin Falcone's arm off because of the way we presented that story in just that one moment.
Magnum has always been able to do this thing that I feel a lot of other independent promotions, especially in this area, fail to do. It's the crowd that's coming out isn't just wrestling fans. Magnum has seeped into the culture of Omaha, Council Bluffs itself.
Yeah.
It's just this cool thing to do, this really fun live entertainment that you're getting fans that aren't even wrestling fans just coming out because, like, it's the cool thing to do in Omaha.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do on a Friday night.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a wrestling fan to enjoy it, and that's what we are trying to push at Magnum. You said it, live entertainment. Again, hide the negatives, accentuate the positives. The things that the Magnum team can do that some other individuals in the area cannot. Logan, student from Full Sail, spent years working with WWE and NXT on live events down there in production. He brings a great production mindset to it. You know, all the guys that are involved with the creative team, all the production guys, everything that you can do on this whole nother level. I remember telling Joey and the guys backstage that, like, that first show that I went back to, I'm watching that. And not at any moment did it feel like you're at an independent wrestling show.
Yep.
From the talent in the ring to the way the guys looked, the production, to the matches, to the moves. There wasn't a moment where you're like, oh man, I wonder how long this guy's been working. You know, he missed that or he botched this. It was just from start to finish a whole different thing. And if you can take that whole different thing and then again turn it on its head and make it a happening, make it that live entertainment thing to where you're not going out on a Friday night to watch the wrestling show. You're going out on a Friday night to have a good time. You know, Magnum Pro on a Friday night is going to be a blast, and that's what we're striving to do, and that's what we're pushing for, and we're getting it done. We're doing it. We're trying to present it differently. Like I said, we want it to be that Monday Night Raw feel. Yeah. You know, I'm pushing so hard to get that hour between doors open to first match to be something special, you know, not just a, hey, get here early so you can get your tickets, but, you know, maybe there's a DJ, maybe there's a band, you know, maybe you've got, you know, someone running around on a microphone like you used to get Todd Pettengill on the free-for-alls, you know, interviewing the audience, just a reason for you to be there when doors open to enjoy that hour before the actual show. Make it feel special. You go to a WWE event, even a house show these days, has the production, has the lights, have the videos and the promos rolling on the screens as you're filing in when nothing else is going on. I want that feel.
Yeah.
You know, I want fans to have that level of excitement when you're standing in line waiting to get in.
From a personal testament, when I came back to wrestling in 2018, Strife invited myself and a couple other of the trainees that had been with 3XW to come out and do a battle royal. It was like his birthday celebration or something. It was the show that Logan came back on, and none of us knew it. We all got invited out to the ring, and then Logan shows up, and we were all excited that he was back from Florida, and Strife won the belt that night and cut a promo and called all of us jabronis. And but just being backstage, like, this is no offense to PWP or 3XW or any of the other promotions, but just Magnum felt different.
Yeah.
It just felt like a bigger scale. Like, everything was just, Strife came in probably 30 minutes before the show started, ran down the card for all of us, told us exactly what we were doing, and gave this speech that was just like, oh, this is the biggest night of our careers. Like, he made it feel like we were superstars and I'm wrestling a battle royal. It means nothing.
There's a
and he
great
made me feel like a superstar.
There's a great clip, and I can't remember if it's from the Rise and Fall of ECW or Dark Side of the Ring.
It's from
but it's Paul Heyman backstage.
It's from Beyond the Mat.
Yeah, Beyond the Mat. That's what I was thinking.
Yep.
It's Paul Heyman backstage before the first ECW pay-per-view, and he is getting that locker room. He's got him in the palm of his hand. Like, you would die for that man. And that's the feeling that Strife would bring to a locker room when he riled you up. And that's the feeling that we want it to be, is we want the locker room to have that feeling. Not that you're not just there because it's another booking on a Friday night. It's where you want to be. You would rather not wrestle anywhere else but there on a Friday night.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that sort of like get you. And yeah, I was there. I was in the locker room that night, and I remember that speech, and I remember, you know, hey, this is happening. And he didn't tell us why. He didn't tell us it was Logan. Like, I had heard because it was me, and I'm nosy and I'm poking around and I know everybody. But just that, like you said, that half hour before the show, hey, let's have a speech, let's talk about it. Just that, yeah, let's fucking go get it. You know, you get excited talking about it.
Yeah. It's for me, a guy that had been around as a fan of this area's independent wrestling scene since 2008, and then not really getting to be in the locker room until 2015 for a little bit, and then mostly in 2018. I saw Strife as just a wrestler, but then I saw him and I was like, this guy's kind of a dick, but he's our dick.
Yeah.
You know, he's an asshole, but he's our asshole. And then you're like, why the fuck does everyone love Strife? And then you get in a locker room with them and you're like, I get it.
Yeah.
Now I get it.
It was fun. I was talking about this with Brixton Nash and Malachi Friday night at the 3X Wrestling. Is there's, you look at the locker rooms and the local guys that came up, that if you ever spent any time with Strife, you fall into like one of three categories. You're like Strife's baby kids, which is my generation, Joey, Bo, you know, Duke, Fowler, those guys, Nautilus. Those are the guys that are like always trying to impress Strife. Like, if he can just say something good about my match tonight, like, that's all I need. If I can pop Strife, if I can get him to say, hey, good job. There was one night, one of my first matches back, I took quite a time off out of the ring after my first son was born. And it was me and Jeff O'Shea, who's that next generation of Strife kids.
Yep.
And Nate pulled us aside after the match and said he was proud of us for that match. And I will never forget it. It was a throwaway match at a bar in Lincoln, Nebraska. But we went out there and it was simple, and we told a story and we entertained, and Nate loved it and he congratulated us. So there's like that first level that is always like hoping for Nate's approval, Strife's approval. There's that next level of trainees, which is your Malachi's, your Jeff's, you know, your Garrett's, those guys that Nate was just as hard on, you know, but at the same time, a lot of that fell on the first generation to help those guys out.
Yep.
And then there's the third generation that got like Papa Strife.
Yep.
Like loving, caring, nurturing. Like it's like when you watch the way your parents act with your kids and the things that your kids get away with at grandma and grandpa's that you never did. And
those
like,
little sons of bitches.
Yeah. You're like, damn it. Like that was the evolving nature of Strife. But yeah, one of the absolute best dudes. I credit him so much for the fact that I am involved or was involved. I got to do so many cool things. How many 115-year-old kids can say they grew up to work with dudes who had just come off TV?
Yeah.
You know, got to hang out backstage with Shelton Benjamin or, you know, work a match with Adam Rose as your tag team partner at a Harley Davidson dealership.
Yeah.
Like, that's the cool shit that I got to do because Nate took a chance on me when nobody else would. You know, it wasn't that I wasn't getting bookings. I wasn't really looking for bookings, but I had an idea for a character and me and some guys got together and we kind of just played off of each other and it worked and you were able to entertain Strife. And that's what I used to always tell you guys. If you can make Nate laugh, you got a pretty good shot at getting invited back.
Yep.
Like, just be entertaining, be ready. Just some of my favorite memories in wrestling from an in-ring perspective are around Nate. I'll never forget a bar show that we had out in Lincoln where we tried to do the old like slide down the bar bit. It was a six-man tag. It was a Hard Foundation versus Bulletproof Stripes faction, and we did this bit where I get thrown out of the ring. I get Spike Dudley'd, like carried on the fan shoulders over to the bar. I grab a drink. I get like cut down. I face plant on the bar, and then the plan was for Strife to slide me down. It doesn't work the way it does in movies. It was just skin on bar that didn't move. Like, and I'm even covered in baby oil, and the bartender's like trying to hose like the bar off to make it wet so it happens, but it is just all the way down it, but just an amazing night and a lot of fun.
Yeah. Last thing that I'll ask you about. So Strife passes away.
Yeah.
A little over a year now. There is Magnum has to get the next guy to carry the torch. Mm. How good does it feel for that to be a lifelong friend in Jay Fowler, a guy that you came up with in the business, and you get to see him from this scrawny kid that wore a mask in APW. And if I'm not mistaken, APW title was his first singles title.
Yeah.
To now he's the guy in the Midwest.
Yeah, he's the guy everywhere he goes, and it's great. It's an awesome feeling to just watch his hard work pay off and see the places that he's going and the places he's going to go. Like, we had a little behind the curtain. You know, we get a text from the booker out at Magnum, and it's, we might need a contingency plan. Like, he's just went 25 minutes, called everything in the ring with Chavo Guerrero. Like, yeah, we might, like, he's going somewhere, like, yeah, soon. And it's going to happen. And he's, you know, he's had some amazing matches with Mike Bennett. You know, he had a great match with Lindsay Dorado Friday night here in Des Moines. Just, you know, John Morrison a couple weeks ago. It's like every show in the Midwest right now that has a name attached to it, chances are they're booking to work against Jay Fowler.
Yeah.
Like, he's just always been a great talent in the ring, but just to watch what he's able to do and progress. I joke about how me and him, like, was one of our first big feuds in APW was Jeremy and Superfly. And like, just to see the level he's at now, and I'm like, man, there's no way I could hang with that. I couldn't compete with that.
When like, you first in the ring. Met him and he started working APW, was he kind of shy?
Very. That's okay. Why they put,
well, I wondered if that's why you put the mask on.
That's why they put the mask on him in training when he was coming up, was he was such a baby face that they knew that he would never, you know, the old thought is, well, that guy's never gonna get over as a heel. He's, you know, he's, yeah, too good looking. He's too much, too polished.
Yeah.
So they put a mask on him. They gave him the Superfly gimmick, the high flying gimmick. And now he's just evolved into this just all around badass in the, yeah, ring. Like, there's no other way to work. He's like, he's chiseled out of fucking stone for one. He's literally all steel. That's the gimmick that he's working. But just watching, you know, everything he can do. And he does a great job of blending styles. You know, we talk about making things make sense in the ring while being able to do the moves and all the stuff that, you know, fans notice that it's going to get you over, that's going to get you recognized. Just amazing talent in general. So yeah, it's been great to watch that sort of evolve and knowing where it came from.
When he unmasked at like CEW, Magnum, 3XW, it was around, I think, the same time that La Sombra came to NXT and became Andrade. And I made this tweet and I was like, is everyone under a hood just fucking gorgeous?
Yeah.
Cause like that dude is, it's like, how, why would anyone put a mask on that
Because beautiful face. You could never hate him. And that's the thing. Like, you put it on a mask, at least then you can maybe be a heel.
Yeah.
At a certain point. But yeah, no, that's really funny. And that's the truth. That's what it was. It's like, you put a mask on this guy. Like, what? And that's it? Like, I remember back and I'm thinking of, you know, Bobby Heenan on commentary. Like, oh, you know, or Jerry Lawler, you know, pulling the mask. Like, oh, I want to see it. I want to see how ugly he is underneath there. Never the case. It's always some handsome devil with the mask on.
It's been an absolute joy to see the guys that I loved hanging out with at APW shows and seeing them like go to Magnum, which is probably the biggest, you know, independent promotion in this area. And just to see what, you know, Joey's done and Donner and Nautilus, and getting the chance to wrestle some of those guys in the very few matches that I did wrestle meant the world.
Joey sent me a picture from a few years ago, and it was a night that the Hart Foundation had won the Magnum Pro Tag titles, and Joey had become the Magnum Pro Champion. And there's a photo of me and him out back with the belts together, and he's like, how full circle is this?
Yeah.
Like, here's a guy that I met wrestling in my backyard that we then went on through APW and time in 3X wrestling and, you know, Magnum Pro. And now we are part of like the machine at Magnum. And I often joke with him all the time. I'm like, somewhere Nate's like looking down and he's like, what the fuck took you so long to come back?
Yep.
Like, and that's how I feel. And then I just see what they're already doing there. And then knowing that I can be a part of taking that to the next level where we want it to go. And it's for, you know, in memory of Jason Strachan, to keep what he started and can keep that moving. You talk about, you know, the battle royals, always a fun aspect of it. You know, we've got Weekend at Strife's 2 coming up, and there's the Jason Strife ride along battle royal where it's all the guys in the locker room that weren't on the show that brought their gear, because that's what you do. Like, all the guys that, like, hey, is there room in that car? Like, I'll sit middle in the back bench seat. I don't care. Like, those guys are an opportunity. And that's what Nate always, how many, you know, early day Eagles Magnum shows, where is it, you know, I've got a 6-man, I need somebody, did you bring your gear? Like, that kind of a stuff. And that's the stuff that, you know, we're going to keep doing and paying forward.
Yep. I remember, I mean, to your point, another guy that you guys came up with and was an APW staple, Sean Nautilus, invited me to travel with him to some show in Kansas. And he's like, you got your gear on you? And I'm a little guy, and they needed him to just squash the shit out of someone to build him up to be a title contender. And Nautilus was like, yeah, he's good. I can throw him around for 10 minutes.
So, yeah. Nautilus put me through the ceiling at Eagles Club, which is one of my favorite moments.
Yeah.
They had a drop ceiling. We did a pop where he just threw me up in the air and half of me is lost in the ceiling tiles for a minute. But
yeah, man, it's like I said, full circle. It's so crazy to see those APW guys now, you know, the machine and like the veterans of,
and Joey and I love doing it. The idea that the thought that they want to give us a camera to do like segments backstage, it's like, okay, just create content. Like, oh, we can create content.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much of it's going to be quality, but we can create content, at least entertain ourselves. And that's one thing. And that's something that, you know, this business runs into a problem with, is when trying to, you know, for the boys booking, you know, sometimes it's great. And then sometimes that's awful. And it, you know, is really a black eye on your entire show and your entire sport. So if you can separate like the from the boys to like the product and, you know, make it all make sense. And that's where, you know, promo work and backstage segments and stuff like that, that can be like the for the boys fun times, you know, just developing characters. We want to get to the point where it is almost like a episode of weekly television where, you know, there's going to be an opportunity where you're going to be coming in and you're not, we don't have anything on the card for you. But we're still booking you to come in here so we can do some promo work, so we can continue to evolve your character, push your story without having to push it out there. I would love for the day where there are, you know, vignettes that are airing on the Jumbotron and the, you know, arena while, you know, we're sort of skirting around trying to keep the show under 3 hours when you've got all this quality talent that wants to be on it or that you want to put on it. Just all these different ways for people to be involved. And I think that's something that, like I said, we don't see that a lot on this level when it comes to pro wrestling, that I want to push it to it and, you know, just change the way it's presented, change the way things are done. You know, if I'm a wrestler, I would, you know, what do you mean I'm coming in? How I want to wrestle, right? Like, no, we want you to be a part of the show necessarily, not necessarily out there in the ring tonight, you know, and sort of creating that atmosphere.
Yeah. Jeremy, thank you so much, man. It was good to catch up.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like I said, we could talk for hours, days.
Yeah, we didn't even get into like Just Another Football Show. We didn't get into like KGGO, but we'll have to have you back on.
Full Sound that's on air right now. I'm two places at once. It's fine. My bosses won't watch this or hear that, so it's okay. But yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. We'll do it again for sure.
Man. Thank you so much.